Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and first and foremost, happy Friday from the F4L headquarters. I am your host with the most, the one and only, the F4L icon, the creator, the founder of the F4L. I am Sean Jazz Stevens, welcoming you to the F4L headquarters for what is bound to be an F4L, TGIF4L epic weekend kickoff show. And yeah, so hopefully everyone's doing well. And I know what you must be thinking. This is the most consistency we've had on this podcast in a very long while. This is like the third show this week, and I know you guys must be loving it because the algorithms tell me you are. But you want to know why I get to do that, which I'm very proud about, is the fact that I have still taken a sabbatical from all of social media, which I'm very happy about. I don't regret my decision to take a break. I needed it. My family insisted upon it, and I agree with them. I am still on YouTube. For those people who don't know, I still have this podcast, and this is going to continue. And also, I have, other things in the works as well. So, it's Friday. What are we talking about today? What are we doing here? Well, whatever we want, really. It's a great thing. But I think what we do first is I want to address something that I'm sure is on a lot of people's mind right now. And I also want to make sure this is understood throughout wherever. I want to make sure my position is clearly heard. And I don't want it to be misunderstood. And I definitely don't want it to be taken out of context. So for those people who aren't aware, people who are in other countries and so forth, today, our country, we in the United States of America have had, laws in place. We have rights that are instituted by the Constitution of the United States. Today, historically, one of the constitutional rights that was established back, I believe, way back when, before I was born. And it was a law that was always referred to as a right known as Roe versus Wade. Basically, what that does is that protects the woman's right to abortion, which is a controversial subject everywhere. And what I want to say, and I don't want this to be taken out of context, first and foremost, here at the F4L headquarters, because we believe in respecting each other's differences, and because we believe in love, caring, compassion, understanding, and respect for each other's differences, on this show, we don't talk about politics. And the reason being, it's because it's a never-ending battle that everyone has an opinion on, and no one can agree upon anything. But one thing I do believe in is the F4L and the F4L mottos and the lifestyle of the F4L, which is, and if you're F4L, you believe and you respect each other, whether they want to have an abortion or not. We don't condone people who try to make others feel bad for their own choices in life. And today in this country, a lot of people, the governments overturned that right that women had. So do I have plenty of things to say about that and things I feel personally about that? Absolutely. Am I going to air those on this show? Respectfully not. And the reason being is because it's just one thing. It's not going to make much of a difference what I have to say about it. But what I am going to say is that I'm happy that I am in one of the states that still allows women the rights to be women and have free will to do what they feel is right for themselves and their family situations. That I can say. But also I have to acknowledge that I don't always agree with everything everyone else says and does. My mother she grew up in the era that was a law. When she was younger, her mother and father, my grandparents, tried to make her have an abortion. My mother, they had her all the way to the clinic, and my mother had this, I did this, you know, I talked about this before. My mother, in the middle of this abortion clinic, told, you know, the people in the waiting room that, you know, you're all here because you opened your, you made the decision. This is how my mother was. And so this is a direct quote from her, from an eyewitness. And the quote was, you all made the decision to open your legs, and now you want to put down your children for your own. You want to put down the babies that you're holding because you couldn't make the decision like they're some type of dog. My mother, who's also an animal lover, also didn't agree with that either. However, she had made such a stink about it at 16 years old that she walked out of the walked out of the waiting room and didn't have what her parents wanted to have. So she fought against that, and she got all kinds of hate from our own blood family. They looked down upon her for it. By the way, if she had not done that, I would not be here today. So I want to point that out. But again, my mother believed that a woman should have the right to do what she feels is right. My mother gave birth 7 times, Ola, but that was her decision, but she also believed that people should do what they feel is right. So you know what? If it wasn't for my mother doing what she did, I wouldn't be here. So I have to respect what my mother would do in that situation. So that's pretty much all I'm going to say about that. I don't agree with, you know, changing something like that, because I think that just opens up Pandora's box. That is all I'm going to say. And because I don't talk about politics on the show, because I didn't go to school for politics. I didn't go to school for laws, and I didn't go to school for all these other things. I wanted to be in film. I wanted to help people, and I wanted to be a pro wrestler. And I wanted to be a husband and a father. And spoiler alert, I've done all those things. So I'm already halfway there. As far as everything else goes, that's just icing on the cake, I suppose. But I don't get involved in politics. I don't talk about religion on this show because everyone's entitled to their own opinions and their own beliefs. I am F4L. I live the F4L way. That I can tell you. And if you don't know what the model is of the F4L, it's, again, love, caring, compassion, understanding, respect for each other's differences. That's what we do on the show. This is how we treat everyone on the show. And this is how we are as F4L worldwide. Okay, now that has been done, I did make my coffee. I'm on time, ladies and gentlemen. I know, this is crazy, huh? And it's a random thing. You know, first and foremost, I want to let you guys know some very exciting stuff. I had told you guys that Jackson Robert Scott, the actor from things like It, from Lock and Key currently, you know, the short film Skins, which was fantastic, The Prodigy, of course, as hence his name, among other roles, which I got to tell you, one of the movies I'm really excited about seeing, which I have not had an opportunity to see yet, I'm going to have to try to find a way to see it, is that's one of his later films in his Mortimer Folds, which is a fantastic, I think it's going to be a great movie. I haven't seen it. I heard it's getting really good reviews in like festivals and stuff. I hope I get to see that and I get to review that. And by the way, yes, Jackson R. Scott is coming on this podcast eventually, but I have some great news that tonight Jackson R. Scott himself, the Prodigy, will be joining me on the F4L Hit on the YouTube show with me to call the action, as we've been trying to do for a little while. So this is something we've been working on for a little while, and unfortunately just timing and technical difficulties has kept us from doing so. But I'll let you guys know that tonight on our YouTube channel, I know earlier in the week I had announced that this show is probably coming to an end soon. Last night, I was talking to Jackson about this show and stuff like that, and seeing the passion he has still for this show and whatnot. And I also got an email that, you know, the last time I shared emails on YouTube, it seemed to go over like, you know, didn't really seem to stick to a lot of people. But I'm going to share the cliff notes of the email from someone who had heard about what we did, who listens to this show, who heard about the podcast, listened to the YouTube show and whatnot. And basically, the sum of the story is that they've been following my YouTube channel, our YouTube channel, since my son and I did it way back in the day. And it is a father son. It is a father and a whole family, actually, who watches our show as a whole. I also got an email from my friend from Australia, who is also a YouTuber, who was very heavily influenced on the show, because if it wasn't for our friend from Australia, the show wouldn't even exist. To be clear, that individual who, you know, we always kept under wraps who did what, but we always make sure we thank him, and I know he follows our show. He watches our shows every single time they're on. He loves every minute of it. He's someone that originally wasn't huge into wrestling, but loves theatrics, loves performing. He is a former YouTube singer. He started singing on YouTube when I was kind of becoming Jazz Fitness on YouTube and becoming a big entity over there. And we kind of grew up in the business together in that sense. He's a lot younger and I'm a lot older, but the entertainment business is one of those strange things where it doesn't matter what age you are because you have the same working title. And it's also strange because it's one of the rare businesses where it doesn't matter what your age is, depending on how you get paid or how you're respected. It depends on what your work quality is, what your ethic is, and whatnot. Case in point, a lot of young entertainers will probably make a lot more than a lot of older people, perhaps, or maybe not as much, whatnot. But I got emails from them this past week who felt poorly about how I was treated, and they felt bad, but they also told me that, you know, what I've been doing has been very important. And what they had said is that even though there's a good amount of people who maybe don't watch, there's a lot of us who still do. And this show means a lot to a lot of people for different reasons. So I'm still debating about, you know, ending the show like it was, because it's just too much work to do like I was. But what I think I might do possibly is do what I originally did starting when we started this concept, and that's do 3 shows a month, because that way there our fans know when we're on, they know when to tune in, and they know they're going to get the best possible show. So we might look into that, but I want to say something really awesome today for those fans out there. I've had my awesome co-host on Tuesday nights. That's JoJo the Model Sebastian, who is, you know, really done a really good job on Tuesday nights with me. It's been an honor doing the show with him. I don't know. We might get him to come part of this new thing here and there, because it's going to be a sporadic type of schedule. So we might actually get him to be involved again if I go with this thing. I'll have to talk to him about it. But I can tell you tonight, you will see the TGIF4L Epic Weekend Kickoff Show like you've never seen before, because doing commentary with me in traditional commentary status. So you're going to see our show, and we are going to be calling the show, myself and the current BA champion himself, Jackson R. Scott, is going to be joining me on commentary tonight. That's going to be taking place tonight during from 8 o'clock, about 8 o'clock, that show will be taking place, as we are going to be the alternative to an alternative on Fridays. We know what. So we'll be on there. That'll be up there tonight. We'll be doing that show for you guys. It's a 4-match card. It's going to be a great card, though. We got a return and a debut. For those Spaceballs fans out there, we have a debut with someone who I've been dying to introduce to you guys. And tonight, he makes his debut. Of course, he has ruffled some feathers, and he's also made some people very hungry. And if there's one thing I know about kids, and trust me, I know a lot about teenagers and being hungry, the last thing you want to introduce to a hungry teenager is pizza. Especially on a Friday night. Well, tonight, the incomparable, legendary Pizza the Hut. Who doesn't know who Pizza the Hut is? Raise your hand. Oh, that's embarrassing. So Pizza the Hut, who you guys may or may not know, is from the cult classic Mel Brooks film Spaceballs. He is the legendary space gangster who allegedly became so panicked and frightened that he ate himself to death after locking himself inside a stretched limousine. That's allegedly because no one ever saw any proof behind such things. Well, tonight, I have good news. Pizza the Hut, we have come to our head coming to the show. However, as I said, what's worse than having who is going to ruffle the feathers of one Pizza the Hut? Well, of course, three hungry teenagers who make their return. Pizza the Hut makes its debut with the return of the strangest Heart Foundation as Gaitlin Matarazzo, Noah Shep, and Finn Wolfhard return to the show and battle Pizza the Hut in a 3-on-1. That's a lot of pizza to go along, so make sure you tune into that. As well as we're going to crown BA Tag Team Champions. Well, we have BA Tag Team Champions, so those people who don't know, our former champions, the Adele Boys, Mason, the Hammer Adele, and Ty, the Devil Adele, who is, by the way, who is the current icon of MMA, is Ty Adele. Him and his brother, Mason the Hammer Adele, his older brother, former BA Tag Team Champions, after a vicious attack by the monstrous tag team known as the World's End, who made their return unceremoniously off air, and they have defeated the Adele Boys, taken the titles from them, and injuring the poor Adeles. I mean, we're talking about Bane and Doomsday. That is the World's End. There are originals on this show. Those of you guys who know who they are, you know how dangerous they are and how awful they can be. Well, unfortunately, the Adele Boys are out injured, so the BA Tag Team Champions, the World's End, that is Doomsday and Bane, also known as the guy who broke the bat, then being Bane, and the guy who, with his bare hands, defeated the Man of Steel himself. And that, of course, would be Doomsday. As they're your BA Tag Team Champions, we have three teams that are willing to stand up there, including mutual friends of the Adeles who were appalled by the attack by the World's End. Tonight, the Stritzel Fight Club, Mason and Carter Stritzel, who, if you guys have been following the show, know that they've been on separate shows since we've been doing this recently. And now they are not going to let their friends, their fellow MMA fighters on their level, get assaulted by two monsters. So the Stritzel Fight Club are reuniting tonight to take on and challenge the World's End. Of course, the World's End, being as arrogant as they usually are, said that they can bring any army they want. And, of course, the Stritzels are very confident that they can defeat Bane and Doomsday. But, of course, Bane and Doomsday had to ruffle the feathers. So, of course, also joining this is the people who are the number one contenders for the BA Tag Team titles. And that, of course, is the Ministry. That is Cosplay Jesus and Father Evil. They are the number one contenders for the BA Championship. And they were technically scheduled to have this title match tonight against the Adeles. But unfortunately, due to the assault by the World's End and the impromptu title match, unfortunately, that is going to have to take place, that match. But the Ministry is going to get their title match, as well as the returning, representing the F4L, will be the returning Viking Juggalos, all the way from the Navajo Nation part of Shangri-La. Sleepy Bear and Triple D make their return, representing the F4L, of course, as they will also be challenging, as they are the Viking Juggalos, ladies and gentlemen. They're going to be challenging the World's End, as well as the Stritzel Fight Club, as well as the Ministry, in an epic square dance for the BA Tag Team Championship. That should be iconic and epic. It is an elimination title match. So last team left standing, or person representing the team left standing, will be the Tag Team Champions. Best of luck to all of them. And of course, luscious Lillian Stevens White is going to be up there to defend her women's BA championship against the Patreon of the Patriot. I don't know what they call the Mother of the family, but anyway, the legendary Morticia Adams is going to be stepping in there to take on luscious Lillian, also known as my mother, for the women's BA championship. And all I can say is I hope that Morticia has plenty of evil left inside her. Hope there's a little bit of Munster in Morticia Adams, because if she doesn't bring her A game, I swear, knowing my mother, she is not someone who likes to play around, and she is a Munsters fan. So, I mean, she likes the Adams family too. So it's not going to not. She's probably not going to feel good about the fact that she's going to go in there and do what she does best and fight on a Friday night. So Luscious Lillian defends the BA Women's Championship against Morticia Adams one-on-one. And, of course, in our main event, oh, boy. So here's the funny part. See, unfortunately, we, as I said, Jackson and I have been trying to work this show out for a little while. But in talking with Jackson and trying to figure out who he was going to face for the BA Championship, he started throwing out challenges. He challenged Hall of Famer Homer Simpson, who was part of the very first class of the Jazz and Sons Hall of Fame. Homer and, of course, Peter Griffin are the first two people inducted in the Hall of Fame, along with others of the first class. They were also among them were Bruce Lee, as well as, they all got inducted at the same time. Also Christina Ricci, as well as Supergirl, all inducted at the same time. This year, we also had our own Hall of Fame ceremony, and this year, of course, Daryl Dixon, also Norman Reedus himself, has been inducted in the Hall of Fame along with as well as The Thing and The Hulk. That is, of course, we know them better as The Brains and The Brawn, Power and Glory, whatever you want to call them. They are going in the Hall of Fame this year, as well as far as Women Warriors Wrestling go, you can't have bigger legends than this. The Golden Girls headlining for the Women Warriors Wrestling as both singles, a team, and a faction, as they are an amazing group of women, and they're inducted this year as well. And, of course, our show tonight will resonate from the Jazz and Sons Hall of Fame. So that'll be awesome. What's going to be even more awesome is that Jackson's going to be calling this action with me. And we're going to find out what it's like to call a match in the third person. But also, in setting up this match, he had made the challenge to Homer Simpson and then started challenging Ash Ketchum from Pokemon and then continued to rattle off about Tom Brady and then Hulk Hogan and all kinds of other people. And he said, you know, I bet me and Aaron Rodgers could do well. And, you know, Jazz, you should join this team too. We should just beat them all up. So tonight in our main event is a team warfare match. It's Team Jackson versus the Hall of Fame, as Jackson R. Scott, being the captain of this team, will lead The Undertaker, also the WWE Hall of Famer, as well as the incomparable NFL icon, that is Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers fame, as well as yours truly and himself, to take on the team of the Hall of Fame, which consists of Homer J. Simpson, our Hall of Famer, as well as Ash Ketchum, Tom Brady of the... A lot of people call him the GOAT, and of course, Tom Brady part of this, as well as the Hall of Famer, Hollywood, Hulk Hogan, on Team Hall of Fame. So Homer Simpson, Hulk Hogan, Tom Brady, and Ash Ketchum taking on Jackson's team of himself, me, the icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, as well as The Undertaker and Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers. That's going to be an epic match. You might want to tune in tonight. Don't quite know how that's going to work out. And I also don't know what's going to happen if Jackson and I lose. It is a team warfare match, which means that basically two teams start, and you can lose by pinfall, submissions, knockouts, anywhere in the building, much like any of our other matches. And, of course, last team or person representing a team standing are the winners. So that's the rules of a team warfare match. You guys might be more familiar with the Survivor Series rules. This is our show. That's how we do things. But that all takes place here tonight. That takes place tonight on our YouTube channel, which will be going up around 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock or so. You should be looking for that on YouTube. It's going to be epic, and I can't wait to do this with you guys and bring Jackson on with me, as he has been one of the most dominant BA champions of all time on our show. And it's going to be interesting to see what someone his caliber looks upon when he watches some of these people. I know he has a history with Finn Wolfhard, as they work together on IT. I know that he's also on the hit TV show Lock and Key, which is a Netflix show, which also links him to the Stranger Things in general. One of his favorite shows, movies, however, is Spaceballs. Interesting stuff. I know he is a fan of my mother, Luscious Lillian Stevens, without even knowing that she's my mother, oddly enough, and whatnot. And of course, he is very confident that he and our team are going to destroy the Hall of Fame. So we'll have to see about that. And perhaps, you know, we're going to see if Jackson's going to, who he's going to challenge next for his title, and hopefully doesn't get us into more problems. That's all I get to say. Anyway, that should be fun tonight. So make sure you look for that on my YouTube channel at Icons of the F4L. That is our current thing. And that is going to be kind of the end of our, regularly scheduled shows, as it is Friday, and that's when we kind of were planning on having these shows lined up. But I can tell you that if I do choose to do the other part, the alternate, where we do the three shows a month, you know, that's probably going to take place like we did before. The 4th, the 14th, and the 24th of every month, we're probably going to be looking forward to doing a show for you guys and putting on a match or whatnot. It could be, I could be having a co-host, I could not. I don't know yet. That's up in the air. I don't even know if I'm going to feel like doing this. But after the emails I got and people begging me not to end this show because it means so much to them, I have fans who, I'll tell you, when I said I was going to end the show, I had kids and their mothers emailing me separately saying, please don't end this show. I don't want to see these guys leave. I don't want to see this show end. This is all I have. And I can't do that to people, and especially when it comes to kids asking me. I can't. I'm a sucker. I'm a dad. That's what we do, make kids happy. So that's what we do. So we're going to be doing that, hopefully. We'll see. Three shows a month instead of what we were planning on. I think it's better anyway. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to do more stuff on YouTube, because I plan on making my return to YouTube as a whole. And also, in other news, you know, I was saying to my wife the other day as we were talking about wrestling, and I said, you know, honey, I think I'm getting the bug again. Now, what is the bug I talk about? Is it a sickness? Do I have that wretched disease? No, not that kind of a bug. I'll tell you about the wrestling bug. It's probably the same bug that a stage performer or actor or musician has. I think we all suffer from the same bug. Let me tell you about what the wrestling bug is. The wrestling bug is the bug that happens when you are at a live event or you see a live event and you have a calling to go back into the middle of the ring to hear that crowd again, to feel the energy of the show, to be part of the show. And yeah, it's true. For the most part, I've had the YouTube show, and I have, you know, I retired from pro wrestling, you know, back in 2019, I retired from in-ring competition. But, you know, the one great thing about wrestling, there is one thing that is certain that wrestling has taught us more than others. It's probably the same thing that people say when it comes to people like Tom Brady or Rob Gronkowski, when we say never say never. You know, as much as Jazz Vengeance, who was the good guy character I played for a long time, you know, he was a fun character. He was my original, and I'm always going to be prone for being Jazz Vengeance. that's probably not going to change. I enjoy, you know, being the voice of the people. But I'm not going to lie. Jez Fitness, the out-of-shape fitness loudmouth guru that he is, he sometimes can be kind of funny and amusing as well. I think I've said on the show before that most people, and I don't understand why, again, the majority of the people out there in the world actually enjoy Jazz Fitness over Jazz Vengeance. Jazz Fitness is very popular with people. I think that resonates because people sort of like to cheer for the bad guy. So, and I'm not going to lie to you, there's been people on YouTube who know where Jazz Fitness has done and what Jazz Fitness has been. So, I am very, very, very contemplating, what if Jazz Fitness, the unfit fitness guru, was to return? Could the world be with him? Can anyone hang with Jazz Fitness would be the question. Where would Jazz Fitness work? We'll have to wait and find out. Because this is still up in the air. As I am still considering with Jazz Fitness making a return to the ring. But what I can tell you, for the YouTube fans who are fans of Jazz Fitness, I have something very interesting to tell you guys. Jazz Fitness, you guys might remember from his epic workout routines that people can learn how to do jazzy jacks and jazz ups and his awesome award-winning workout routine called Yogurt and whatnot. I had heard through the grapevine, his publicist had reached out to me, his gym manager has written to me and told me that Jazz Fitness himself would be returning to YouTube. And he has been working on all new routines. In fact, he has been working on an all-in, all-out. Basically, he's been hitting up the Eye of the Tiger, and he's been hitting the workouts like Jazz Fitness always does, if you want to call it that. So, fans of Jazz Fitness who are listening, don't say I didn't tell you so, and don't say I didn't warn you, and be careful what you ask for, because unfortunately, depending on who you are and where you are, you will get what you asked for. And this is going to be interesting because Jazz Fitness is going to be returning very, very soon. So there's that. You're welcome. All right. You have to stick around. You got to watch the YouTube channels. And it's probably not going to be on the same YouTube channel as the wrestling stuff. But I can tell you that I also have some other things I'm going to be addressing on YouTube as well, including, and I got to tell you, I'm on YouTube a lot more than other places. I'm actually on YouTube more than I am on anything else. Why? Because that is what got me to be where I am, and that's what made me famous to begin with. I am the original YouTube sensation, Jazz Fitness, as well as, you know, someone who kind of not kind of, but I pioneered what YouTube was going to be in a lot of the ways. And I'm proud of those things. I don't hide from those things. I'm not ashamed of those things. And in all honesty, I don't hide as Jazz Fitness. Like I said, somehow worldwide, he is pretty liked. I don't understand why. He's a jerk. I'm not going to lie. But sometimes, I guess, in life, it's good to cheer the bad guy, I suppose. That was the only way to really explain it, I suppose. So, like I said, be careful. I told you to be careful, and now we got it. So here we go. All right. Let's move a line around, shall we? That's some exciting news, though. I know you Jazz Fitness fans out there are very excited. Everyone else in the world? Sorry. He's back. But all right, let's change the subject. Let's do a film review, shall we? You know, it's the weekend. This weekend we have a few big movies coming out worldwide. I think some of them might have already been out. I don't know. But this weekend we have some, you know, I think the two highlighted movies this weekend will be the new Elvis biodoc as well as the film written by Stephen King's son, The Black Phone, based on a short story by Stephen King's son. That comes out this weekend as well. I know I got to view this, and I'm going to be giving that a review in very few minutes. But you know what? When it comes to the biopic for Elvis, I've not seen it yet. I probably am going to because I know my wife is very much interested in seeing the Elvis biopic. She's a huge fan of Elvis. You know, I think even it doesn't matter where you come from, what era you come from, what your musical taste is, it doesn't really matter. No matter where you are in the world, you've heard of Elvis Presley. Excuse me. Let me take my coffee. 1 second here. Beautiful. People will, you know, can deny it all they want, but the fact of the matter is everyone, no matter where you are, they know who Elvis is. Worldwide, they know Elvis. And again, that's not a bad thing. It's kind of, he's part of pop culture. He's called the King of Rock and Roll. He has all kinds of monikers. He has all kinds of gimmicks and all kinds of things. Everyone at some point has heard of Elvis. That is undeniable. It is it's going to be something that people can't peed about, they can't complain about, because it's all accurate, 100%. Facts on that. Now, that being said, so let me have time until I see this as well. I'm sure I'm going to be seeing with my wife at some point. She's probably going to do it just like she did for the other biopics and see it 7-8 times maybe, depending on how well she likes it. I know we saw the Queen biopic several times. The Elton John semi-biopic, we saw that as well. She really liked that. Of course, that would be the Rocket Man movie. From what I understand, I have not seen it again. And judging by what a lot of other reviews are right now, and also judging by what the kind of the how these biopics have been going lately, it's probably going to be loosely based upon Elvis's thing. It's like kind of like Rocket Man, where it wasn't 100% accurate to the T, but it was, you know, it's kind of there. I'm sure they're going to nail some of the things that made Elvis popular, kind of like all those other things. But I think realistically, if you're going in there to see a film that is going to be historically accurate, I think that is something is unrealistic expectation for yourself. I think you're underselling yourself, and I think you're setting yourself up for disappointment. But if you go into the film looking for something that is going to give you a general idea, maybe you're someone who is maybe you're a millennial who wants to find out, why does my mom and dad like Elvis Presley? I am pretty certain this film will probably give you some ideas. It'll probably give you, kind of point you in the right direction. If I was to guess, that would be a guess. I'm going to say that this is something that any Elvis fan is going to be going to, and this is going to be a film that I'm sure is going to overshadow a lot of other things that may or may not come out. It happens, and it's cool. It is what it is. It's going to be fun. And you know what? Like I said, I don't mind Elvis Presley. I honestly, you know, I'm going to tell you that I personally feel that Elvis Presley is overrated myself. And I know I just got done telling you how iconic he is. And that is something because I'm realistic and I'm honest. I'm not going to deny the fact that Elvis isn't influential and the fact that he is not an icon. I can't take that away from him. He absolutely is. That is because the fan base that he has created on his own, and that is something I can't take away from him. And that is something I can't deny him. It is a fact that he is an icon. He is a legend, and he has the he has that tenure that he deserves, that he's earned on his own. I don't particularly enjoy Elvis. I think, again, I think that he is a little bit more overrated. I don't think he's as awesome as everyone else makes him out to be. That is my take on him. I like a lot of other things more, but I can't also deny the fact that he is not a legend at the same sense. I'm interested to see in this biopic exactly how close they get to some of the things that makes Elvis, you know, Elvis. I'm curious if there's going to be certain things they're going to, you know, embark upon. I don't know if many people know that Elvis in the Beatles, legendary Beatles, John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, and Ringo Starr. These are also legendary performers. And this is going to shock a lot of people, and probably people are going to be like, I can't believe it. This is also another band that I feel is overrated. But I also wonder if that's just because I am also someone who doesn't want to feel like everyone's forcing me to like what everyone else likes just because everyone else in the world seems to like them. I hope that makes sense to people. I don't want people to – see, here's the thing about me, how I look at it. I think that I don't want to have the same kind of – I don't want people to think that I like people just because everyone else in the world does, because I don't. I like to form my own opinions. But I think also the same sense, as much as I'm not overly fond of these individual artists, it doesn't take away from the fact that they are absolutely, positively still icons. They are still legends. They had a historical rivalry, Elvis and the Beatles, and there's a lot of rumors and innuendo whether or not Elvis tried to keep the, quote, British invasion coming to the United States, and that he may or may not have had the same issues with people such as, the Queen, you know, Freddie Mercury and Queen and all those guys. Because the reality is he did. He had issues with some of those people as well. But, you know, I think what that comes from, though, is the fact that when you're in the same kind of a business and you're in the same kind of a field, it happens in wrestling and it happens in, well, I'm not going to lie to you, it happens pretty much everywhere where there's always that kind of undertone professional jealousy within the business. It happens in wrestling, it happens in film, it happens in TV, it happens in entertainment, music. It happens in everyday workplaces, really. You always have the person who wants to have what someone else in the business wants. You know, there's always that person who wants the Oscar, but someone else gets it instead. So, of course, they're going to start building an animosity towards that person who's always getting what they don't have yet. My personal belief on that is I go at my own rate. I do what I have to on my time. And I don't try to overdo my, I don't try to make myself bigger and better than I am. It's just who I am and what I am, what I do. I think people need to be patient when it comes to things of that nature, because not everyone has the same kind of work ethic. Not everyone has the same skill sets. I think it's unfair of people to compare themselves to people based upon what they have. It's kind of like, you guys are all familiar with the glass, excuse me, as I trip all over my words, the grass is not always greener on the other side. We all heard that story, right? It's an old saying people have heard, have said. Basically what it means is just because your neighbor has this, you know, the idea is, you know, in theory, is the neighbor next door has something that you want. You want that beautiful garden, that beautiful lawn. But the thing about it is not everyone has the same kind of jobs, income, backgrounds, and a lot of other things that come in the way of these things. That doesn't mean your contributions are not relevant or important by any means. I think everyone's important in their own ways, and I think everyone brings their own skill sets. I'm going to tell you a story that my uncle told me once, and this is a true story. You know, it's funny that, you know, in life, we're always in situations where, you know, you always hear these, we consider to be these old coin phrases, right? These old fogey, these old man sayings, like, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side, or if you get thrown off the horse, what kind of a person are you? What's funny about that is I am living proof of what those things are, and all realistically, because I've been through a lot of those things in real life. I have been thrown off a horse, as I told the last time I talked to you guys last. And I have been, involved in these various real life lessons. I told the story the other day. I grew up raised around race horses at my uncle's when I was a little kid, raised around horse stables and barns. And I literally got thrown off this jerk horse. He was a jerk horse. But my uncle said, if I didn't get on the horse again, I'd probably never want to go on again. And I got on again, and I never had a problem again. I learned smarter. I became tougher. And I owe that to my uncle for, you know, giving me the courage to get back in the ring and do it again. Get back in the ring. Look at me. Get back up and do it again. It is what that is. All right. That being said, all right, so that's the story I told last time. Let me tell you about this story that I hadn't told yet. When I was a teenager and I was, you know, on my own, this is actually around the time the F4L was born, when the, you know, the F4L became a thing, and it was a thing. And this is around the early days, and a lot of people didn't understand what the F4L was. I get that. People confused it. People didn't understand it, much like they still don't, really. But, you know, whatever. The original F4Ls and I, we continued doing what we needed to do, and we didn't really listen to what everyone else, you know, felt or didn't feel. Sorry. That's just what it was. But the thing about it is we were in a place where we were around other teenagers our age who were in situations like ours. I left home at a young age. And that was something me and the original F4L had in common. We didn't have an actual home. We were staying in a place that had other young people like ourselves. And that's kind of where we came from. That's kind of how we found each other. And that's kind of how we built our relationships. We had families that didn't have the same feelings we did. They didn't like the things that we believed in. We believed in love, care, and compassion, understanding, respect for each other's differences. And there's a lot of people in the early days of the F4L who are in our blood family who don't believe in those things. I myself had family who were racist, who were sexist, who were, you know, not nice to other people or things, didn't respect anyone else's differences. And that's not something I believed in. I didn't think that's what made a family. I remember being very, very sad. Thinking, why can't, you know, watching all these like holiday specials, especially, why can't my family be as loving and supporting of these TV families like the Brady Bunches, the Partridge Family, Growing Pains? I think this is one of the reasons why people my era grew up with sitcoms. I think this is one of the reasons why I believe sitcoms really need to come back and get away from this reality stuff. Because things like The Conners, which we have still, thank God, and some things like that. They're few and far between. There's a lot more reality shows than there are these sitcoms that we all grew up with. These shows that I'm talking about, the Brady Bunch, the Partridge Family, Growing Pains, Happy Days. Happy Days, of course, and the Brady Bunch precedes me. But I still knew about the Brady Bunch. I grew up on the original original reruns. But I also, you know, endured. That is something I lacked in a family, and that's something we all wanted. And, of course, the Partridge Family. And then, of course, in the 80s, we had a bunch of families and sitcoms we could sink our teeth into. Roseanne, which is where the Connors came from. There was Growing Pains. There was Silver Spoons. There was Happy Family Ties. Family Matters in the 90s. Boy Meets World in the 90s. And all of these other 80s shows, Growing Pains, Full House. And these are shows that, you know, people would see these families, and no matter how many, you know, whatever life threw at this family, they were always together. And that was something we, the original F-World, didn't have in our own families. That's why we created our own. That's the backstory of where the F-World came from. We were people who wanted that in a family, and we didn't have that on our own, so we made our own, and we became our family. There's a backstory of the F-World. But anyway, the moral of the story. And, of course, because we have our own beliefs and not everyone sees our views, and a lot of people, when they hear about who we are, what we do, and they hear about what the F4L is, they think it's been called hokey. It's been called goody-goody. It's been called brown-nosing. You know, there's all kinds of things people have to say, but it's just, unfortunately, it's just how it is, and it's something we've had to deal with for a long time. People who don't understand it are quick to judge us for, you know, liking the things we do. It's been called too good. It's been called not realistic. It's called a perfect life, and that's not anywhere close to being what it is. It's not about having a perfect life at all. It's about just being and just, you know, just being there and being part of it. And that's kind of what it is. It's nothing more and nothing less. But people make it to be something, you know, it's not about being perfect. It's about being there and being a family, being responsible and whatnot. And you would think that when you first hear about what the F4L is, you would think, oh, a lot of people must love that or understand it. And the sad part is, no, that is the opposite of what the F4L is. The F4L is often misunderstood and is often, judged because we're too nice, we're too cokey, and that we're pushovers. We don't believe in consequences. We don't believe in holding people accountable. None of those things, not one of those things is accurate at all. We do believe in, you know, consequences. We believe in love, care, and compassion, understanding, respect for each other's differences. That's what we believe. And we believe in fighting for those things that we believe in. We're not pushovers. We're not, you know, people who just take whatever life throws at us. We end up for each other. We're there for each other. That's what a family is. That's what you do as a family. But anywho, that's neither here nor there. Now, that being said, there was a younger person who was our age who didn't understand the F4L, much like everyone else in the world, and he viewed it as, you know, being stupid, pointless. And he was someone who believed in, you know, embellishing his family's accomplishments, which I don't understand. But, you know, my uncle, who was the same uncle, by the way, who had the racehorses, who also told me about the, you know, if you get thrown off the horse, get back up. And this is another one of the life lessons. It came from the same person, in fact, which is interesting. And the thing about it was, my uncle, I think I talked about it before, he he, one of his day job, if you would, his, obviously his, you know, 24/7 job wasn't a racehorse owner. That was something he did in his pastime. His real job is first of all, he had a moving company. And the other thing he did is he moved, these businesses, like, let's say like a company was going out of business or a place was closing. It would be him and his company who would go in to close that thing down or whatever it would be, to pick up whatever's left over and either throw it out, move it to a new location, or he would buy a good amount of whatever's left over. And then what he would do is, like, these restaurants or stores or whatever was closing, what he would do is he would then go ahead and take whatever restaurant supplies or different supplies, and he would sell that to other businesses that were starting out, or you know, big corporate things. You know, it wasn't like everyday mom and pop. But then again, let's be honest, how many mom and pop people are going to want like a professional pizza maker? And that's the stuff that my uncle did. Like, he cleaned a lot of like restaurants that would close. He had a corporate account cleaning out all the Stop and Shops and stuff like that. I know there was a restaurant called Brigham's. He closed a lot of those. It wasn't that he closed them. He would move them, and then he had to deal with the owners. They would have a good portion of whatever it was, and then he would take some of those items and resell that as recuperating for some of the fees. That's kind of what he did. And I was talking to him about this kid who was bragging about his family who had a fruit stand in our area, and his family had all these fruit stands. He's always talking about how this kid thinks he's the greatest since rice pudding because his family owns a fruit store. I said, the kid doesn't own a fruit store. His family does. And I'm someone who believes in, you don't, if your family has money, doesn't mean you do. I think you have to still earn your own way in life. I think you also have to earn your own name. That might be because I had to work my own way into wrestling because I didn't have anybody always in wrestling, which is kind of funny because when I got into pro wrestling, I'm technically the first person in the family to cross over in an entertainment world. But my aunt, who also helped pay for some of my wrestling school, my cousin ended up going into the music business, and he became a singer, who, by the way, he's still singing, which is another reason why I'm wondering, maybe I should go back to wrestling. But and I'm still writing and stuff, so that doesn't matter. But because of that, you know, whatever the case may be, you earn your own name is what I was saying, because we don't have the same last name. So he makes his name in music. I make my name in wrestling. That's how we've always done it. But we still have, you know, we're family. So blood's thicker than water, right? He's probably the only family actually I get along with outside of a few others. Like, I have a cousin of mine, him and his grandfather, my Uncle George, one of the best people we ever had in our family. His grandfather, my Uncle George, I haven't really talked a lot about, you know, we're going to have to do a deep dive into the family someday, the family tree. Oh, my goodness. That would be crazy, actually, now that I think about it. That would probably drive me mad trying to figure out my family, because my family, family tree, my blood family, is a very confusing thing. And it seems that every year when I think I figured out who's who in the family, there's always some new revelation that comes out, because our blood family believes in secrets, lies, and, you know, people stabbing each other on the back, and lies and secrets, and that's just not how we believe in the F4L. So, but my Uncle George was one of my mother's brothers, of course. He was older, obviously. My Uncle Paul is my mother's twin brother, who I've talked about on the show before. And Uncle George was right over her. Was over both of them. He was like the third oldest, I think, or the second. Well, yeah, he's the third oldest, Uncle George. One of those two. But Uncle George, his only real vice is he did enjoy drinking, but in no way did that ever slow him down for who he was. He was an amazing carpenter, drunk or not drunk. He could. A lot of people think that laying carpet down or being a carpenter is something easy to do. And Uncle George could do a whole room in like 15 minutes, 30 minutes. He'd have a whole giant living room done, beautiful carpet, everything else. very talented in that way. He was also really good with animals, especially dogs. If you gave Uncle George a dog and said, hey, can you get this dog to come back to me when I call it? It would probably take him literally maybe a day, and by the end of the day, the dog would come on command. That's how good my uncle was, and he didn't believe in hitting the dog, slapping the dog, or aggressive. He was nice to animals, much like, you know, much like I am, and they came. And that's one of the things, you know, we are going to have to do like a family special at some point so I can describe all these things. And because there are some fun parts of my blood family that I don't talk about that are very much nice. But there's few and far between, and not everyone in my blood family is like this. But my Uncle George was, my mother's older brother. Unfortunately, he's also no longer with us either. But him and my mother are probably partying right now, now that I think about it. And right now, it's probably really loud, I'm going to guess, as they like to party even more. And they also like their music loud, so I'm sure they are partying even more than we are here right now. On a weekend especially. It was a stationary thing for my mother to play her Madonna or whatever on the weekends, and Uncle George to play his Alice Cooper and School's Out for the Summer type of thing. Customary. Anyway, his daughters, he had three daughters, my cousins, and they're awesome people too. I don't have any problems with them, and they're wrong with Uncle George. They all have kids, of course, because they're all my age. Whatever else. And, you know, everyone makes mistakes and everyone has ups and downs or whatever. But, you know, here's the sad part. I don't know if everyone's family is like this or not. I know with our family, the blood I'm talking about, it seems that for the most part, the only time we'd really see each other as a whole is at wakes and funerals is the only time we see each other. I think what I understand and what in talking to so many other people, we're not the only ones with that. I know there's a lot of other families who are similar. The only times they see you, great deal of people at the same time as wakes and funerals, and that's a sad truth. But unfortunately, that was, you know, it's kind of like when I, you know, got reintroduced to a lot of Uncle George's kids and stuff like that, even though I knew them, obviously, and we grew up together, sort of. But in the blood family, everyone kind of does their own thing, and everyone keeps themselves. And then there was another relative who's in the family, another one of my cousins who is the opposite of any of us people. She's exactly what I'm describing about when I talk about not so good family. And she apparently felt the need to tell my cousin that her father was a joke, that no one liked him, and that they never wanted him or any of them around. And then I had to explain to her, no, that's the furthest thing from the truth. If anyone was not welcome in being part of this family, it would be my mother. My mother was the one who was usually the scapegoat of everyone's little things. She was usually the one that everyone has something to say about. She was someone that, you know, everyone had, you know, commented about her parenting style and whatnot, even though 3/4 of them did it themselves too. Anywho, that's neither here nor there. But, yeah, let's not go into them, the craziness. But what I can tell you is this, right? That wasn't the case, that it wasn't that we didn't like Uncle George or his kids at all. It was just that everyone lived all over the place. Uncle George lived in there. Everyone seems to, like, I know a lot of people think they come from an area that has a lot of places, and they probably do. I lived in the New England area most of my life, and there's always a new area I've never heard of. And unfortunately, you can live in the same state, but yet live miles and miles apart and never see anyone. That's the sad reality of it. And then you have relatives who live, you know, miles away, and that also happens a lot. And it, you know, it's just what it is, right? So, but that being said, it is kind of how that works. So, but anyway, my cousin Shai, which is the son of my cousin Michelle, Michelle's a hardworking girl. She's a mother. She's a few kids. She's a great mom. I think she's doing a great job. She has, you know, her kids, and she's always, like, being, like, the, And I know how this goes too. She's kind of like the sensible one, I guess you would say, of her kind of a group. She, you know, cause she's very responsible. She started young too, like my mother did. She was a young mother. She had to learn their ways herself, and she got help from people. Yeah. My mother didn't get as many, but you know, I have no ill feelings towards Michelle. I think Michelle's awesome. She's now working in insurance, and that's not easy for anybody to do. She's earned everything on her own. And not only is she helping her own kids, but she's also there for her family and her, you know, sister's family and her, you know, she keeps in track of everyone. So of course, you know, we're going to try to have like a family day where, you know, my cousin Michelle and her kids and my wife and my family can get together, have that kind of a family day. Because I think it's important to have those relationships. And I know I was just talking to my former sister-in-law, which sounds interesting, right? Talking to my sister-in-law, who I haven't seen in a very long time. And I have a niece and nephew I have not seen since they've been little kids. And I talked to my sister-in-law the other day, and now teenagers, time flies. And that's what I mean by, like, everyone goes their own ways and you don't see anybody for, you know, times at end. And of course, you know, part of that is, I guess my sister-in-law and my brother broke up. And then unfortunately what happens in those relationships is sometimes people just alienate themselves from the other person's family because it feels awkward to talk to the opposite. I don't necessarily agree with all that. I think everyone is entitled to make their own decisions and hang out with who they choose to hang out with. Talk to whomever they choose to talk to. That's just how I feel about it. I am not everyone else, for the record. But it is kind of how it is. So there's that. Now, but so yes, Shaheem is the son of Michelle, and he's going to be coming on the podcast. You know, he's an aspiring actor and model. He's done some work already. He's been part of, you know, I think he's been part of my production. As you guys know, I've made films in the past, and he was working on my movie. Did it helped out with a scene here and there as an extra and stuff like that. It was great to have him there. And, you know, one of the things I always say to people is when you're making a film, it's important to keep in contact with the people who come and sacrifice their time to be part of your show. I think this is very, very important. I think it's extremely important to keep track of whomever is part of your production, because you never know what's going to happen down the pike. And the way I always look at it is if someone took the time to be part of something that I writ, something I wrote or something I had produced or whatever, then I should have the same respect for them that if I ever have something, I'm going to give them the opportunities. That being said, you know, as far as, you know, why did I bother with, you know, social media? When I think about it, it's really because I honestly have always had a knack for talent. But before I go into that, I do want to finish up the saying that I started talking about before I went off on the tangents on, you know, talking about my family history. See, as I was talking about my uncle who gave me the life lesson, right? The same one about the horse or whatever. And what happened was with the kid at the fruit stand, he said how his family had the fruit stand and they think they're all high and mighty. And my uncle, just to, you know, show the humility of it and to show that, you know, don't compare yourself to everyone else in the world. And don't think just because someone else has something that you don't have anything either. Because as my uncle pointed out, yeah, you're right. His family has fruit stands, but guess who sold him? But guess who sold all of his relatives, all of his uncles, his father and his mother, all of their supplies to start that fruit stand? That's right. My uncle is actually the one who actually sold all of his uncles, him, his father and everybody else, all of their equipment they needed to start the fruit stand. So his point was, in layman's terms, that, yeah, okay, he did that. But in the same sense, it is, his point was, the moral, the reason why I sound like I'm distracted is because there's multiple things going on right now that you probably can't hear. That's a good thing. There's all kinds of arguing going on in the area. So, and I'm trying to focus on, you know, talking to you guys. That's okay. That's just how I do things. So for that, I apologize. But anyway, the moral of this story, I'm going to focus. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do this podcast, and originally there was no sound when I was doing this podcast, and then all of a sudden fights started happening, and arguing has started happening, and as a person who doesn't believe in certain things, yelling, screaming, hitting, and whatever else, some things are really, really distracting to me, so I apologize for that. Please excuse my lack of diligence, I guess. It's just I hear someone getting hit or hurt or screaming, especially young people. I automatically don't like it, so I apologize. Now, allow me to get back into the show. So my uncle's point was, yeah, he might want to think that his family is the greatest, but our family sold his family all of what they have. That was what my uncle's point was. And you know what? I appreciated that. Because I needed to hear that, if you want to know the truth. It is kind of something that needed to be heard. I think it's an important lesson, and I appreciated it. So, that was that. Now, that being said, okay. So that's what his point was on that. Just don't think that just because someone else has something else, it doesn't make them better than you are or better than what your family situation is, because that might not be the case at all. And that's almost 80% of the time that is exactly correct. Not everything is as awesome as it sounds. Not everything is as good as it sounds, and that's just, you know, what it is on that end. Thank you on that. So let's do a film review like I was beginning to do. Now, those people who know, so all right, so as I said, The Black Phone comes out this weekend, and unlike the Elvis documentary that I began talking about and that I did talk about, that I said eventually I will get to watch, I haven't watched it yet. For the record. But it doesn't mean I'm not going to watch it. I do plan on doing so. So just get ready for that. But that being said, all right. Yeah. This is getting crazy and I'm embarrassing myself, which I don't enjoy much. All right. Focusing. All right. I hate hearing kids cry and scream. It's not something I enjoy. I'm sorry, folks. I'm going to try this a couple more minutes to try to do the show. If not, I'm going to have to end this so I can take matters into my own hands. I'm sorry. I'm not going to listen to this all night long. Movie reviews, talking about The Black Phone. I did get to screen it. I actually enjoyed it. I kind of figured it looked like something that Stephen King's relative would come up with. You know what? And that's something I have to say also. I think I did. That's actually, I think, how I ended up where I am. As I was talking about how I respect someone who earns their own name, is what I began talking about, which is ran us down to the path about the old story about, you know, being respectful and being honoring where you come from too. But the reality of it is the movie was really decent. It's probably not what a lot of people are expecting, The Black Phone. I think that you're going to be pleasantly I think the problem with a lot of modern horror is that it's very predictable. and they always seem to have the same kind of tropes, and they always seem to have the same kind of an outcome, an outline. They seem to rely on the same scares, which, to be honest with you, that kind of gets stale, I feel, after a while. That's just what my own feeling about it. I feel like it gets stale because there's so much that that you could be doing. There's so much things that could happen that it's just kind of sad that there's not enough of it. It's just something on its own. You know, the same kind of the same kind of routines get stale after a while. And if you guys remember, last week we had our friend Tim on the show as we're talking about Father's Day coming up. Actually, it was a week ago today, in fact. And we were talking about Father's Day coming up, and we talked about, you know, one of the things I'm going to have done, and is I'm going to get a hold of Tim, and we're going to be coming on here to talk about these horror tropes that go on in the horror movies, how they always seem to have the same kind of flaws and the same things. And what we would do in a rational position, what we would do in a rational setting. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to send Tim a couple movies, and we're going to watch the same movies before, and then what we're going to do is we're going to compare those movies. We're going to say what they did in the film and then what a realistic person would do in the scenario. I know, as we talked about on our show about Father's Day, we talked about how the parents in these horror films are absolutely the worst or the dumbest parents ever. They're lazy, they're not smart, they're not intelligent parents at all. Also, authority when it comes to police, they're inept to handle just about any situation. So these are the things that we're going to explore. So I'm going to be sending Tim a couple films to watch, and I'm going to watch the same things, and then we're going to intervene on the show and kind of talk about what they did and then what we would do as rational humans in the films. I think that would be funny, and I also think that these are things that I think a lot of like horror people who are trying to break into the horror community should probably listen to. Because I'm going to tell you, do I think that a horror movie can be made to be realistic and people can be intelligent in them? And do I think they would work? Yeah, I actually do, because I think people like myself are hungry for that. It's rarely been done where someone in a horror movie makes an intelligent decision, so much so that when it happens, it outshines the rest of the film. The earliest situation that I can talk about, and I actually was fortunate enough to actually tell the person to their face how much I appreciate it as a horror fan, because it was never done before, and it took this person, the first person ever to think of it, and it took place in the reboot to Halloween. That was the newer one that came out just before the one that just happened. The first Halloween that happened, like 2018, I want to say. And I'm talking about the little kid who, you know, Michael Myers came in, and the kid said, "Nope, I'm out," and he ran out the door. It's all he needed. It's all he needed to hear. Bang, I'm out. And before that has ever happened, he is the only person in a horror movie to make an intelligent decision. Of course, he's a kid, right? Kids are the only ones like me and Tim pointed out, the kids are usually the smarter ones in the group, and the adults are idiots. And this film, this kid made the smartest decision ever. Michael Myers was coming. He's like, "Nope, I'm out." And he ran out the door, ran out of the house, and he was done. That is what you do in a realistic situation. And because of that scene, that outshined anything else from the film, because the kid just showed that no one else is intelligent enough as he is. That's why the kid's still alive and, you know, avoided Michael Myers and all these other things. So I actually was able to tell him to his face that was a smart idea, and I loved it. I also told the filmmaker and the guy who played Michael Myers the same thing. I applauded all of them for the intelligence there. But I think if I was going to make a horror film, and to be clear, I do have kind of an anthology thing that I'm working on currently, working with a famous writer that may or may not live in Bangor, Maine, and I may or may not be using the Dollar Baby Project for that. And I want to again thank him for that. That person know who they are. But anywho, this individual, who is the son of Stephen King, wrote The Black Phone as a short story. And the movie itself, I look at all of the – I've talked before about what I look for in a film. One, are the characters believable? And the cast, I believe, is the most one of the most important parts. The story is the other. If you don't – first you have a story, then you have a cast. Do I believe the story? Do I believe the cast? Those are the really two things that really need to stand out. And do I feel something in any way to this film? Do I feel compassion? Do I feel anger? Am I feeling appropriate for this film? Like, for example, if I'm supposed to be angry, am I supposed to be angry? And am I angry because the film makes me angry at a character, a situation? Or am I angry because it's really, really bad? And I'm going to have to say that no, I'm not. I wasn't angry at any point of this movie, but I was. Well, no, that's not true. There was a certain element. I was angry because, you know, this movie tackles a lot of things, and there's a lot of things in this film that hasn't been in the trailer. Which, again, kudos to whoever's doing the marketing for this. There's been the same trailer that's been worked out. And what I got to say is, if people think that what you see in the trailer. You know, like a lot of the times these movies, they'll show you like the best parts of the movie. And when you get to see them, like, oh, yeah, now the rest is all filler when you see the actual film. This movie is different because I think this film, the best stuff for this film is not seen in the trailer. In fact, there are things in the trailer that may or may not actually take place in the film. So you got to make sure you watch it. I actually really enjoyed The Black Phone. As a father and a parent myself, nothing would horrify me more than not knowing where my kids are and then my kids not coming home. Of course, the town would probably not like me very much because I'd be going up and down every single house in probably the entire state until I found them at least. I already have the roads blocked off. And, yeah, I'm not – when it comes to my kids' safety, I'm not probably the nicest person in the world. I am probably the worst nightmare for someone who messes with the kids, especially mine. And then any kids are in my care, like our friends' kids, whenever they're with us, I have that same kind of bear. They say the mama bear thing. Well, mama bear can be dangerous, but being vengeance is even worse. And that's what's my nickname in real life and in wrestling, so... I live by that name when it comes to people who mess with my kids or you know, puts my kids in peril, which would never happen. Anywho, that's one thing that I take away is the idea, because I think everyone kind of knows the idea. So let's give you guys the plot without giving away too much, because I'm not going to do that. It just came out today. The plot of this film is, this takes place, you know, not too far from here in a different time period. And this takes place in something I think a lot of people know about. It takes place in something people are familiar with, the people who would just abduct kids. And a scary time where there was people who had a reputation going around and kidnapping random kids. And this is a scary, this took place in the 70s. And of course, I remember growing up where I was in a little small town, and we had a similar type of thing where I was from. And there's also been historical things about other things that have happened with historical, like, you know, type of, you know, almost notorious stories like, you know, the Boston Strangler and things of that nature in my area that people talked about. You know, people talked about, you know, someone came to my door, I just didn't open the door and things of that nature. Those close encounter calls and things of that nature. I came up from the 80s. A lot of people look at the 80s. And like, oh, yeah, you know, it's all retro. It's all great music and movies and television. Yeah, it was, but it was also a lot of scary stuff. Because for one thing, no one's really home. And that was one of the scariest things, is because the old way to do it, all the way throughout the 80s, is, you know, you went outside and after school you came home. You went out and came home when the lights were on. That's kind of what you did most of the time. Me personally, I didn't have a lot of social interaction with other kids because, one, I was not, you know, for one thing, my family didn't make it easy to have people at the house, because every time someone would come to the house, they'd usually embarrass me pretty bad. But the other thing was, what was I going to do at the house? There was nothing there to do. But I do say, I can say that I still went outside and was outside more. I'd go for a nature hike. I'd go to the woods. I'd go work out. I'd go for hikes. Nothing gave me more joy than looking at nature, playing with the animals, talking to the bugs. Yeah, I'm one of those kids who looked under the rocks and talked to the bugs and, you know, wouldn't bat watch. Oh, I could sit there and bat watch all day. I bird watch. Yeah, I was a geek. I liked nature because sometimes animals are better than people. At least back then I saw that. And not a lot of other kids were into that stuff. I think video games were just starting to become a thing. Like Nintendo was around, but there wasn't a lot of that either. Not everyone could afford a Nintendo, so it wasn't like every, like it is now with the 700 different kind of appliances that someone could afford something. There was really no GameStops or anything. There was no demand for it. So it was a different time and whatnot. That's kind of how that works. Excuse me as I cough. And again. But what made it scary in the 80s is the fact that kids were given a lot more, more freedom because they wanted it more. They didn't want to be inside playing video games. They actually wanted to be outside playing basketball and playing at the playground and things of that nature. You know, I wonder sometimes because I haven't been to a, you know, it's been a lot. I mean, when I go to like schools to do like lectures and stuff, I don't know how if they still do recess anymore. And I also don't know what takes place if they do recess. Growing up, I went to two different elementary schools, really. And between the two elementary schools, they did their recesses completely different. Like at one school, it was okay to have the wrestling matches at the schoolyard, like I talked about before. And then the other one, it was frowned upon deeply, and it was considered fighting for some reason. And then in that school, in the other school where it was okay to wrestle at the schoolyard, that was okay. By the way, I also got married at the schoolyard, the same thing. I was in first grade. That's a different story for a different time, though. But at that school, those are the things that took place. That was, again, a different time. Today, none of those things would happen. But then in the other school I was part of, it was kind of customary, depending on what class you were in, you would have to either play, you might have to be mandated to play kickball. That's how they regulated recess back then. So two different schools, two different ways of doing recess. I don't know if recess happens anymore. And if it does, I don't even know what they do anymore. But I know what we did back in the 80s when we had recess. We had various different games. We had Revio, we had kickball, dodgeball. We had hopscotch, several different jump rope type of things. I don't really remember half of them because, you know, guys didn't generally do the jumping, the jumping rope thing. Some guys did, not everyone, but some did, but I never did. And also, the other thing they do is these like I call the patty cake games because I never got into those either. That was when you did these like really concise, like patty cake kind of games. They all had rhymes, kind of like the hopscotch type things. Never got into that either. Like me and my buddies, when we were growing up on the schoolyard, we were playing things like I just mentioned. We were playing kickball, dodgeball. Of course, Ninja Turtles were really popular. Ghostbusters was popular. So we'd play like things like that. And then we would like fight over who was going to be who. For some reason, I was always voted to be a bad guy most of the time. I was Shredder. I was Skeletor. We played the real Ghostbusters. We played Ghostbusters, which, by the way, in the 80s, there was a debate between the TV show The Ghostbusters and then there was the real Ghostbusters. There was two different shows, completely different casts, completely different kind of ideas on what they were. I have to say I am much more fond of the real Ghostbusters, which is based upon the movies. Then they had another Ghostbusters, which is not associated, and that was the one that everyone liked to play. I remember, you know, another group of my friends and I, we would play Teddy Ruxpin. I know, I'm dating myself now. I'm saying things you guys don't even know about millennials. And a lot of the parents are out there like, oh, I remember Teddy Ruxpin. Let me tell you about Teddy Ruxpin. He was a talking bear. cassette player in his back, and his mouth moved to match the whatever the thing was that he was supposed to read. Originally, it was meant to read, like you'd put the cassette tape, it would tell you bedtime stories or whatever, the bear, and it would talk, and the mouth would move as if it was, you know, alive. But the fun stuff was when you found out you could actually put a regular music tape in it, and then, you know, Teddy Ruxpin would be rocking out to some Aerosmith and Metallica. And then they stopped letting us have those at school. Anyway, these are the things we did. So from that era, I can understand the fact people going out and, you know, playing baseball, playing these sports, playing what rockets, the times when you went, you know, to the you know, playgrounds. I'm not saying kids don't do those things now. It's just been my kids are older now, and I know, you know, they do their own thing too, but whatever. But that was relatable to me. I believed a lot of that because I can understand that. And I also remember the areas when you had to worry about being abducted. You heard about stories. Usually they were associated with some type of boogeyman kind of a story, you know. And, of course, the boogeyman himself was something that was like a family legend for us. There's all kinds of different intellects and talks about those things. Again, you know, at some point we're going to do a family deep dive, and I'll tell you how I grew up, and then you guys can try to figure out where I came from and to give you guys an idea of how and why the F4L became a thing, and I think it'll be apparent. But, you know, these are the things that the parents used to use as kind of like a life lesson. My grandmother, who is literally, as we used to say, off the boat, she came from Ireland. She was full of all kinds of these old Irish folklore things, the various things, you know, the hag lady will come, the sandman and the fairies and the, you know, the boogeymen and all these other various things. The banshee's coming, you know, the death is coming around. And, you know, she believed a lot of that stuff. She kept a lot of those stories alive. And she also told the old wives' tale about the nun and the this and the that and the, you know, the child, you know, the child taker and the, you know, Bloody Mary. I don't know how my grandmother knew about Bloody Mary. She knew about Bloody Mary and all these other random, various different, you know, urban myths and legends that parents usually said to kids to scare them into doing whatever the parents wanted them to do, usually be obedient. Spanish culture, Hispanic culture, they'll talk about La Llorona. You know, at some point we'll have my wife on. She could talk about it because she grew up in a Hispanic household where La Llorona was a thing. I didn't grow up in a Hispanic household, and I didn't know about La Llorona until I was much older in life, and I could do my own research. And La Llorona was similar to, like, the boogeyman, which is what we grew up with, or the banshee, or the leprechaun. And a lot of people who hear about leprechauns, you automatically think, you know, of Lucky, you know, from Lucky Charms and these nice, joyful little leprechauns who, you know, grant wishes, and that's actually not how leprechauns looked in Irish folklore. Same thing with fairies. A lot of people, you know, think of fairies like Tinkerbell from Peter Pan and what Disney creates as fairies. Fairies in Irish folklore are very dangerous animals. You know, my grandmother would tell stories about mermaids. Mermaids are things that a lot of people, you know, really think are beautiful and they're nice and they made movies and they're, you know, all these other things. My grandmother, you know, told stories about if you don't learn how to swim, the mermaids are going to drag you down upon. And she would tell stories about the mermaids who, or the sirens, as she called them also, who just, you know, took people who didn't know how to swim and drowned them. These are the stories the parents used to tell to scare their kids into doing whatever they said. Because La Llorona, rumor has it, was of a Hispanic thing, was someone who came, is a woman who, you know, depending on what variation you hear, because there's all kinds of different stories, much like any other urban myth or any other legendary, you know, story or wives tale, there's always someone has a different take on it. So, of course, it changes over the years, and depending on who your family is. In Hispanic culture, for example, is that, you know, La Llorona was a beautiful woman who had a very attractive husband who was very committed to him. She had kids with him. He cheated on her, and then because she got so upset and jealous of the other person who he left to be with, he took the two things that were most precious to him, and that was his two kids, and she drowned them in a river. And depending on who you talk to, either she after she drowned them in the river, she got so guilty she jumped in herself, or she, you know, whatever. There's various different reasons, right? She either drowned along with her kids, you know, took them all to die together, murder-suicide type of thing, or she drowned them and then killed herself later out of guilt, and that's why she is, you know, she'll usually punish the evil Hispanic kids who don't listen to their parents is the idea on that end. Yes, this is how people kept the line. This is why these things don't happen probably anymore. In my family, we used to hear about the Sandman and the Boogeyman. And, of course, the Sandman came if you didn't pay attention and you didn't go to sleep at night and you didn't do what you're supposed to do. The Sandman would come. The Boogeyman would come if you, you know, didn't, you know, do what you're supposed to do, and where else the Boogeyman would come. So these are things that we grew up with knowing about. And, you know, these are things that also nowadays would be considered, like, horrific things to tell kids. But back then they used them to keep everyone in line and make sure kids listened. I don't see why people can't do, like, you know, what you would do now, is simply explain to them, this is why you don't do this, this is why you need sleep. I never told my kids any – I did tell my kids bedtime stories, but I never had to horrify them to go to bed or to listen. I've never – I don't believe in corporal punishment, which is hitting our kids. I've never hit my kids. I never would. I don't believe in it. I don't think it does anything good in any way, shape, or form. I think it just makes them fear you, and that's not something you want. Back in the day, this is something that a lot of people like myself and my wife and other people grew up with. This is a norm for discipline. I don't believe in that. I think there's many other ways to get your point across. I use communication and open communication with my kids. I tell them why we don't do things. I'm open with them. I tell them when, and I show them proof of these things. I think reality is much better than lying, scaring, or hitting kids, or hitting people in general. Hitting just makes them want to hit people too, and that's not something they necessarily want to do. That's my stance on that, and that's something I feel strongly about. Now, my wife and I, you know, come from two different kind of backgrounds. Like I said, my wife came from a time where she's a little louder than I am. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes she yells. I don't believe in yelling even. Does it mean that our kids are perfect angels and never get in trouble? Absolutely not. Do they get in trouble and do we, you know, discipline them? Absolutely. The difference is when the kids are in trouble, I talk to them and I tell them why they did what they didn't do. And the other thing about it is we got to make sure as parents that, you know, we're very sure of our kids' faults versus a misunderstanding or something else happened. Now, of course, I'm not talking about making excuses if your kids, you know, did something and then you're trying to blame it on someone else. But I want to use some reality-based stuff for you guys right quick. There's been more and more cases of, like, for example, teachers who are very abusive to our kids in school. We don't know what happens in schools once our kids go there. And I think this is one of the reasons why with our kids, for example, at the end of the day, when we're having dinner with them as a family, we talk as the day. How was work? How was school? We all sit there and talk and make sure everything's good. And our kids tell us. And I always have an open communication with our kids. And what I always tell them is, listen, and I always say this, I would much rather you tell me the truth than lie. I don't like lying. I still don't like lying because I am a bluntly honest individual. When I say that, it's an absolute proof and statement. I am absolutely, I don't like lying. And if I catch someone lying, I hate it. I don't like lying. Never will like lying. It's lazy and it's not attractive. It's not a good thing. It's not fun by any means, and I don't enjoy it. Thank you. On that end. That being said, I am under the, you know, that being said, you know, I talk to our kids about everything, and, you know, I know for a fact that teachers aren't always 100% accurate in everything. I've had calls from the school where a teacher, a gym teacher, told my daughter that if she didn't listen, that he was going to slap the dye out of her hair. I kid you not. Now, my daughter already told me this. Well, actually, she was almost afraid to tell me this because she knows that I don't put up with that, nor will I stand for that, and I will be the one to take care of that. But and I did go down to the school and take care of that when I found out. But the thing is, my daughter almost didn't want to tell me, but she did. And then the school told me afterwards because other people heard what had happened and it was reported to them. And that was why when I went down to the school didn't have an issue with me talking to the individual who foolishly said such things to my daughter. Now, that is I know that is a very random situation, I guess you'd say. This is probably something not a lot of people would ever think they would encounter. But I think it's important to realize that, you know, when your kids are in trouble, make sure it's justified that your kids are in trouble. And it's good to have the communication with your kids to make sure, in fact, they either did or did not do whatever it is they're accused of. Because, I mean, let's say, I mean, we all grew up with parents and, you know, people telling people, oh, yeah, he did this and that. And listen, the reality of it is, if you weren't there, you can't really talk on it. You got to go by whatever you go with. And a lot of parents are quick to, you know, side with the teachers. Well, clearly, if your teacher said it, it must be true. And I just want to say, if you have a good enough relationship with your kids, that you have an open communication with them, and that you have that kind of, you know, thing that my wife and I have, then you really shouldn't have an issue with believing your kids when they tell you, hey, listen, my coach told me this. Think about that as a statement. That doesn't sound like something a kid would pull out of nowhere. But it also, for most parents, like, I can't believe a teacher would say that. But here's the thing. The reason why that can go over is because, you know, they might not want you to know that, but that's something that they hide behind if people who are in these areas where that is a thing. There you go. Now, that is kind of, you know, my take on that. You're always good to listen to your kids. And this we're talking about right now is because I'm giving a film review on Black Phone. The reason why I'm roping this all in together is because I'm giving you guys the reality of why this movie was so good is because I think that this movie really is probably closest thing to a realistic story in the last several years. It is believable as a horror film because of how honest that is. It is a thing, absolutely, that you know, people were abducted. This was a time period that happened. And it's scary. It's terrifying. As a parent, it's terrifying for kids. That's why this movie works, because that goes back to the whole my whole feeling about if the story works and the cast is believable, the movie will succeed. I think this movie will succeed if people give it a chance. Am I saying it's going to be an Oscar contender? Probably not, just because of how, let's face it, the Oscars are kind of biased to those kinds of things anyway. They don't generally like to give horror movies awards. And I sadly don't think this will win an Oscar. But I definitely do think that this film can stand on its own. I think what it also shows is that the writer originally of this film, the short story, Stephen King's son, this came from his mind, and he did this, you know, on his own, and he didn't want to live on his dad's name, and you know what? Kudos to him. And I think he did a good job standing on his own. I really do. I think he has, you know, basically showed a lot of people you don't need to have and rely on, you know, it's easy for someone to rely and say, yeah, I'm the son of Stephen King. And, of course, people love Stephen King and are going to automatically want to be invested. And that's not what we had here. This is the original short story written by Stephen King's son is, as Joe Hill is the name of the original author. Furthest thing from Stephen King, because he wanted to stand on his own. Give him credit, man. That's awesome. And, of course, you know, he had some help with some other people, Scott Derrickson and Robert Cargill. They're good, too. And as far as the cast goes, let's talk about the cast right quick. They didn't overdo how many important roles they had, which is smart. We don't need a bunch of fluffy characters. That's important, and it's necessary. The main character is played by Mason Thames. He plays Finney. He's the young man who is being traumatized. His sister, Madeline McGraw, what an amazing job by this girl. She did such a great job. I love a film that shows a girl is just as tough, can be just as ballsy as a guy. I really respected her. She did a fantastic job in this film. For what they had to go through in this film, for what they had to endure in this film, for what they portrayed in this film, ballsy move by everybody involved, great job. Scott Derrickson also directed the film. Great job on his part. Now, you have Ethan Hawke as a villain in this movie. Ethan Hawke, we all grew up in the younger days, right? We all grew up with Ethan Hawke, the explorer and, these lovey-dovey characters from the 80s, right? And then what happened was Ethan Hawke started doing some amazing work with horror films. He was in the Sinister movie, the first one. Great job. That was the first, I think The Sinister might have been the first movie I saw Ethan Hawke in a very long time. And I'm like, wow, he can do horror movies now. Good for him. And growing up with someone who was kind of like the heartthrob of the 80s, and then and that was something that, you know, he was right up there with, you know, River Phoenix and the Corys and everybody else was Ethan Hawke. And he stood his own, and he's a villain in this movie. And boy, does he do a good job there. And when you want a villain, and you're a horror fan or you're a movie fan, and you're kind of combining all these things, does the villain work? Is he believable? You know what? What's scary is, yes, it does. Does Ethan Hawke do a good job being a menacing kidnapper, killer, whatever? Great acting is all I get to say. I also want to say Jeremy Davies is in this film. He plays the father of the brother and the sister, which is Finney and Gwen are the name of the characters. He's their dad, and in this film, we deal with all kinds of things. The horrors at home, the horrors in reality, and sometimes the horrors at home can prepare us for the horrors outside, and I think that is kind of the underlying tone of this film. He does a great job. And the only other movie I remember this guy in was in a film a lot of people probably didn't see called, it's one of my favorite films, actually. It was actually the first time I saw another person in the, 1 second. All right, 1 second, folks. I'm going to tell you right now. And I don't know why it's slipping my head. It's one of my favorite. Oh, wait a minute. I don't need it. It's Kind of a Funny Story is the name of the movie, I believe. I'm just going to double check it because I hate giving you guys the wrong answer. It is an independent film, of course, because I recordly will go on record saying I prefer independent films and foreign films over overpriced, overused Hollywood trope films. And maybe that's partially because I come from film and because I respect the filmmaking business and because I am an independent filmmaker, not a Hollywood executive. That might play into it, but the movie it's Kind of a Funny Story is a movie that deals with teenage depression, and it deals with a life on a mental ward and someone's, you know, the most realistic portrayals of what it's like to live and grow up in the mental health world. I'm going to give you guys the right one now. I want to make sure you got the right movie for you guys. Zach Galifianakis was in the film. The movie was a thing that didn't have a huge cast, right? But who they had in the movie, it was also mixed with real-life people who lived on in the Omni psych ward, because they actually filmed inside of a mental hospital to make the film. Again, that makes it realistic, so all on. How far back is it? This is an older movie, too. It's kind of a funny story. It is a very old movie, if I might say so. That's why it took me a little while to load it up. It's how far back it goes. It was a good film. It also has Emma Roberts in the film. She's a young, she's the teenage love interest, the main character, or is she? You know, another thing, Zach Galifianakis, like I said, you guys are more familiar with probably from, you guys are probably more familiar with Zach Galifianakis from things like The Hangover or things like that. And a lot of people who will see his name will automatically think it's definitely going to be a funny comedy like Hangover. I'm not saying that Zach Galifianakis doesn't give the role the Zach Galifianakis effect, but you know what? This movie, he did a it might be one of the best portrayals I've ever seen Zach Galifianakis ever do. And it might be one of the best portrayals of someone who suffers from mental illness has ever done. Zach Galifianakis is someone who I've been fortunate enough also to talk to in person and have you know, written respect for and stuff like that. And Zach Galifianakis, one of his biggest tips to me as a filmmaker and as a writer is always to follow my own lead and do my own thing. You know, don't necessarily judge what everyone else says about your work, and just if you like it, then you like it. Stand by it and own it. You're your own individual. And wow, what a message from Zach Galifianakis. People don't give him a lot of credit, and they always see him as the character from Hangover. He's very intelligent, Zach Galifianakis. And Ethan Hawke does a great job in this film, Moral of the Story. And the guy who's in this, Jonathan Davies, as I mentioned, the only other film I remember him being in is in, it's kind of a funny story, where he plays a very small role as a counselor at this, you know, clinic. He does such a convincing job that I actually thought he was a legitimate, you know, staff person, because I know some of the people they mixed when making the film with both people who worked on the in the ward and people who didn't. This guy did a great job there, and he's believable in this character as a dad who's struggling with loss and just, you know, in general, trying to deal with two teenagers during a scary time, trying to deal with his own inner demons. He did a great job here. I think everyone in this film did a great job. Of course, you know, we have to have some bully stuff thrown in there, and we have to have the. I really love the bully busting scenes in the film. I like the payoffs for those. I think it. The only thing that I really, I mean, the film was good. Let's put it that way. I think you guys should see The Black Phone. Let's just end it like that and just go see The Black Phone. I think you'll enjoy it. It doesn't. It's not a very long movie. I feel, and if it is very long, it doesn't seem like it. It kind of does, kind of suck you in. You care about the characters. You want to see them succeed. And you don't like the character. I get, for me personally, I was trying to figure out the character more, and that comes from my background in human services. Because I believe there's always two sides of every story, just like there's always a reason why someone may or may not be the way they are. My only thing I would change differently about this film is I wish I kind of had more of a backstory on this individual. Is he doesn't even have a name. He's just the grabber. I think that's a little lazy by myself, but it is what it is, right? But you know what? It was a good film. I highly recommend it. And you know what? I think what I'm going to do is start reading some of Joe Hill's other short stories. I am a short story writer myself. And you know, seeing my relationship with how much Stephen King has helped and influenced me and my stuff, you know, I think it's pertinent, actually, to, in you know, invest in something like that. Yeah, absolutely. Now, excuse me. Now, I am winding down here because, you know, soon is going to be time to put that show up. I got to go put the show up on YouTube. We got to go find out what happens tonight. So I'm probably going to end this a little early because I got to make sure Jackson, you know, get to tape on time. You don't want to miss the show, folks, tonight on YouTube. Go see The Black Phone. Comes out in theaters this week. Great film, I think. I think you'll be enjoying it and stuff like that. I got a lot of things down the pike on this show. And remember, the only place you'll see me is here and on YouTube. And, you know, if you have my number, you know my email, wow, W-O-W, dreammatches, dreammatches at gmail.com. I'm working on bringing all kinds of guests in here, including Jackson R. Scott, JoJo the Model Sebastian, Tim's coming back on to do that horror movie challenge, Dave Hagen, and countless others will be coming on. My wife is going to be part of the show at some point. Joe Bruin is going to be on the show at some point, and multiple others. So make sure you stick around to learn and hear. I know Walker Campbell wants to come on here as well, so we're going to get a hold of him and have him rock out on this show. He might be one of the first people to rock out. We'll have to find out. Maybe we'll have him and JoJo on, and they can rock out together. Imagine. Horrific, right? All right, everyone. This has been a great show. I got to make sure we go get ready for YouTube. So I'm going to let you guys go enjoy the rest of your weekend. I am the F-World icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, saying I hope you guys have a great weekend. Make it epic, the TGI F-World way. Epic to the fullest. May all your dreams come true. Have a safe and fun weekend. Peace, everybody.